Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
So you got your bracket filled out yet? It'll be interesting to see if ESPN does a big thing on SportsCenter with Donald Trump's bracket. You know, they went crazy for Barack Hussein Obama, always doing his bracket, and he always got his fanny whacked. Remember he did that thing where he was shooting free throws at the White House and he missed like 20 straight free throws? This guy's huge basketball. And, boy. Get your bracket filled out. Moneypenny and I already have. Is little Annie back in the news center still? Oh, she's gone back to the newsroom, yeah. We'll see if Annie has filled out her bracket. You got Duke and North Carolina in there? Yeah, the world has Duke and North Carolina in there. I think we have about 300 entries so far in our bracket challenge that we run every year. I was talking with Mark Hendricks earlier, and I think we had something like 1,400 entries last year. We got some really good prizes in there. If you like to play, you like to fill out the brackets, just go to our website, 1063WORD.com, and you'll see a big banner there, how you get in on the bracket challenge. It's always fun, and Moneypenny and Little Annie and I always play here because, you know, we're competitive against each other.
Sounds like a fun crew.
Well, it is. You know, win, lose, or draw. We have fun with it.
Didn't I kick your butt last year?
If memory serves, I believe that last year I think the expression is got my butt kicked last year. Yeah, I think I went with more favorites last year, and there were bracket busters galore, and I just got whacked. I just got whacked. I was out of it like after Thursday night. I was toasty. But I think I had forgotten. Yeah, this didn't help me any either. I think I'd forgotten Sweet 16 games, and I left those blank. That's not going to help your bracket a great deal. So I can tell you this. Moneypenny and I both do have Duke and North Carolina in the Final Four. All right. As we go along, you know, we'll compare notes and see what happens. Great to have you here as we get the work week started. Thanks to Tony Dale for filling in on me on Friday. It allowed me to run a bunch of errands and get a lot of stuff done that I was in arrears on, as they say. And I still, even at that, you know, because it rained, didn't get everything done that I wanted to get done. And so I had to spend about half the morning today still wrapping things up. But everything is copacetic now. Everything is good to go. So thanks to Tony for filling in on for me on Friday. It gave me an opportunity to kind of get caught up a bit. Here is how you join me and be a part of the conversation today. Just grab your phone. Use the Ingalls Advantage talk line, 800-347-1063. Common Sense Retirement Planning text line number 71307 and my email address bob@1063WORD.com. I did get in some golf over the weekend. I played Saturday morning with the guys in the Cobb group over at Pebble Creek, and we played in an absolute gale. We went off at like 10 o'clock in the morning, and the temperature, I think, was 42. I had the heater going in the cart, and it wasn't enough. And I was wearing like 5 layers of clothing, so I could make about half a swing. And it was nasty. But then yesterday, I played with the dogfighters up at Cherokee Valley, and we play up there at noon. And I started out with three layers, and by the time we finished, I was down to a short sleeve golf shirt. It was nice. It was like, what, mid 60s by the time the afternoon was over. So we did get in some play this weekend. Now then, to the items at hand, opinion piece by Michael Hammond at the Daily Caller today. Lindsey Graham is aiming to turn the GOP into the party of gun control. Now, I know you may immediately be saying to yourself, wait a second, the Democrats are going full-bore commie with a Green New Deal and all the other stuff. And now, you know, when the GOP has an opportunity to really stake out a beachhead for conservatism, here is Lindsey. Lindsey Graham scheduled a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on March 26th to consider legislation to confiscate large numbers of guns with no notice and no due process whatsoever. I don't get it. Two types of bills have been introduced over the last year and a half. The first approach was put forward by Lindsey and Richard Blumenthal, Democrat, Connecticut. You remember Hanoi Dick? He's the guy that claimed to have served in Vietnam, and he never got closer to Vietnam than I think Hartford. Blumenthal Graham, why would you possibly team up with this guy on anything? He is a proven liar. Blumenthal Graham would create a federal gun confiscation program whereby any police or an angry ex can petition for a secret court hearing to strip a gun owner of his or her Second, Fourth, Fifth, and 14th Amendment rights. When only the accuser is in the room, a judge will normally sign anything that is put before them. In an analogous situation in New Mexico, for instance, a housewife obtained a restraining order against David Letterman for sending her coded messages over her TV set. Okay. Under Blumenthal Graham, the first thing a gun owner would learn of the gun being confiscated was when they're taken. In Ferndale, Maryland, a 60-year-old man shot to death by police serving one of these so-called red flag orders at 5:17 in the morning. Turned out the complainant was a non-immediate relative seeking to punish the gun owner after they had an argument. Blumenthal Graham is so bizarre that at the time of this article, it hadn't been reintroduced in the 116th Congress. The second alternative embodied in S-7 and S-506, those are the two bill numbers in the Senate, would fund states which authorize this form of gun confiscation. There are 14 such states, and except for Florida, which was cowed into gun confiscation by the near riot of Parkland kids, and a 1999 Indiana statute, the remaining 13 states are the bluest, most anti-gun states in the country, and I'm sure you're shocked to hear that. The specific reason for this would be a new federal policy directed at punishing gun ownership. S7 has some comic aspects to it. For instance, any individual related by blood to the gun owner could bring a suit. Hence, although Elizabeth Warren may be only one 1,024th Indian, any Cherokee could bring an action to strip her of her guns, if she had any. If Michael Bloomberg could go to Ancestry.com and prove he was related to you, he could take your guns away. Yeah, you could spend $10,000 to try to convince the judge he made a mistake. After the fact, guess what? It never works. Incidentally, S7 also authorizes telephone hearings. Yeah, phone it in, and sets minimum requirements which differ from every program the bill intends to fund. So if enacted, it would ultimately lead to a court opinion starting with, the statute was drafted by an amateur, but what it meant was, S 506, introduced by Senator Dianne Feinstein, lunatic California, seems to be the bill that is garnering the most support. Attorney General William Barr and Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley are discussing the possibility of adding front-end due process. This presumably would eliminate the middle-of-the-night secret ex parte proceedings, but it turns out such a change is impossible. All of the 14 state gun confiscation statutes have ex parte provisions. So if that change were made to S7 or S506, no state would qualify for funding and the bills would be negated. So what an incredible gift it would be to Democrats if they could persuade the GOP to destroy their conservative base for no particular purpose. Of course, Republicans would be foolish to do this, but then again, it wouldn't be the first time. This is an op-ed piece by Michael Hammond. He is the legal counsel for Gun Owners of America. All right, and I will pass this along to Moneypenny so you can read what he has to say. And there's more on this because I thought, as I'm sure you did, you thought to yourself, okay, I know Lindsey, goes off in his liberal tangents from time to time. But what's really behind this? And again, we come back to that seminal question, follow the money. And we do that with this when we come right back.
Excellent.
Great to have you along as we get the work week going today. By the way, I will be here all this week. All the week after that. And I think most of the week after that. great to have you along. 3:23 here on the Bobby Mac Show. So the question immediately comes to mind. Why is Lindsey Graham pushing a red flag law for gun confiscation? And I'm just old enough that I remember the investigatory process during Watergate, where Woodward and Bernstein, the two reporters from the Washington Post, were told, follow the money. So I keep coming back to that. Well, here is another story that turns up about this. Oh, and by the way, coming up right after the news at the bottom of the hour, very special guest today, Professor Victor Davis Hanson. From Hoover Institute to Stanford University, he's got a great book out, The Case for Trump. He is one of the brightest guys on the planet, and so I've been looking forward to speaking with him. You've probably seen him. He's been making the rounds on Fox News and other places promoting his book, which is a great book, by the way. Now, here's the business on Lindsey. This is by Teresa Mull. Senator Lindsey Graham just announced the Senate Judiciary Committee will hold a hearing on gun control at the end of the month that will likely focus on federal red flag confiscation legislation. Graham, it should be noted, accepted funding from rabid anti-gun billionaire Michael Bloomberg in 2014. This according to the Post and Courier, the newspaper in Charleston. Former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg's $250,000 contribution to a super PAC supporting U.S. Senator Lindsey Graham's reelection is tied to Graham's strong support for Israel and his record of results in Washington, the PAC's controller said. But Bloomberg is also an outspoken advocate of gun control, which could come back to haunt Graham in a state filled with voters seen as pro-Second Amendment. Gunpowder Magazine has reported repeatedly on extreme risk prevention orders, so-called ERPOs or ERPOs, otherwise known as the red flag gun confiscation laws, which are pitched as a way to get guns out of the hands of people who are a danger to themselves or others. Under these laws, innocent, law-abiding gun owners can have their guns seized by police acting on the basis of a tip. There is no due process, and gun owners, left defenseless when their guns are confiscated, are forced to prove themselves innocent after the fact. This sounds like the old Soviet Union. In Maryland last year, a man was shot and killed on his own doorstep when cops showed up to take his weapons. That's the one I mentioned where the raid was at 5:17 in the morning. Dudley Brown, president of the National Association for Gun Rights, said red flag laws are a blatant, terrifying violation of gun owners' constitutional rights. And once they're enacted at the federal level, there's no telling what other Orwellian practices the government will start enforcing. These laws make it legal for cops to use a mere tip as an excuse to storm your home day or night without warning and seize the private weapons you rely on to defend yourself, your property, and your loved ones. Gun owners must make it known that they will not sit idly by and watch such un-American proposals become the law of the land. Graham, who chairs the Judiciary Committee and who co-sponsored a red flag bill with Richard Blumenthal last year, told CNN, quote, "Most of these cases have something in common, not all, but most, a very disturbed person that people have interacted with before. The Parkland shooting is Exhibit A. The guy did everything except take out an ad in the paper. The FBI got called, local cops got called, and nobody did anything. Florida passed the red flag law." Well, why didn't Florida insist that these various agencies that are charged with making sure that people who should not be approved for gun ownership are not approved, why don't they do something about that? Rather than punish innocent gun owners. Lindsay continued, "Florida passed a red flag law, so what we're going to do is get people from the country. Arizona has one now, and see how they work, and see if we can incentivize states to pass legislation to allow police to intervene with family members or police officers are becoming a danger to themselves or others." God. According to CNN, as a former JAG prosecutor, Judge Advocate General, he was an Air Force lawyer, Graham was quick to add that there'll be plenty of due process for the person being affected. Oh, yeah? Where? But call this a positive tool for law enforcement that he views as missing currently in many states. "We're trying to drive states to create these laws with certain guidelines to make sure they actually work, but to let the states deal with this issue, but to incentivize them to do so." This hearing is set for March 26th, as I said. This is the most Orwellian, confiscatory gun legislation that I have ever seen in my life. You don't believe me? Ask the poor guy who got shot to death in his own home at 5:17 in the morning because he'd had an argument with a relative who then used this red flag law as a stalking horse, as a Trojan horse, to create a problem for the guy. In on the text line, Bobby, taking people's guns with no due process based on the word of accusers reminds me of Germany, circa 1939. Texter says, Bobby, Lindsay is running for re-election. VP Pence will be in South Carolina tomorrow. Yeah, they'll be here in Greenville. Myrtle Beach and Greenville. Maybe somebody should drop a dime on our senator. 3:30 here on the Bobby Mac Show. When we come back on the other side, I'm joined by one of the most brilliant guys in academia and one of the few who has the spine to stand up for conservative principles. Professor Victor Davis Hanson joins me next.
Excellent.
Welcome back. 3:36 here on the Bobby Mac Show on Monday, and it is indeed a pleasure to welcome to the airwaves this afternoon Professor Victor Davis Hanson, author of the new book, The Case for Trump. Professor Hanson, a senior fellow in military history at the Hoover Institution at Stanford and a professor emeritus of classics at Cal State University in Fresno. Professor, welcome. How are things on the Raisin Farm?
Pretty good. I sort of transitioned to almonds.
Oh, really?
In the last 3 years. Yeah. So less labor, and less work.
I'm all for that. Professor, you have defended the things that Donald Trump has been trying to do to restore America's greatness as a beacon of capitalism and defender of traditional values. And much as the president has been attacked, you yourself have been subjected to the vilification of the left stuff in the New Yorker and other. But I guess this is to be expected, is it not?
I did expect it because, you know, Trump excites passions, but I thought I wasn't going to write a rah-rah book that he was a saint nor that he was a sinner. I was going to try to analyze him in a historical sense, mm-hmm. kind of dispassionately, and then sort of make the argument why people voted for him was the correct one in 2016. He's done pretty well. But what I wasn't prepared for, I guess I was naive for somebody like Gabriel Schoenfeld and the new Bulwark, the Bill Kristol venue, saying I was basically a Nazi, like Martin Heidegger writing on, and Hitler was Trump, and then I'm a Nazi spokesman for Hitler is what basically he said. Or the Washington Post said that I wasn't fair to this person, or I'm sloppy as a historian, and then they don't quote what I actually wrote. If they just quoted, they could see that it contradicted their own thesis. Or the New Yorker, you know, I've had a unfortunate experience when interviewers will call me for a magazine and they'll say, hey, we love the book. I used to know you. I saw you there. You were great. Let's just talk. Oh, by the way, and I'll say, I'd better do it by email so I can have a written. Oh, no, you can look at the transcript. Don't worry.
Uh-huh.
Hey, by the way, I'm going to record right now. And then you talk for an hour. And then the next thing you know, in the New Yorker, I just did one with a foreign news. What they print has nothing to do with what you said. And you say to them, just give me the transcript so I can see that where you cut and paste and you took this out and that. And
right.
Pretty. I had no idea that. Well, I did have an idea, but boy, there's such a hatred. I was on the airplane just 2 days ago and a guy tapped me on the shoulder and said, did you write this Trump book? And I said, yeah. And he said, could you sign it? And he had it under the seat. So he pulled it out, and I said, well, why don't you read it if you want me to sign? He said, oh, it's like a red MAGA hat. I would never let anybody see that I was reading it.
Right.
That's kind of a sick climate we're in.
Yeah, it truly is. And the interesting thing is, Professor, in reading the book, I think people will agree with your thesis, which is, if I can do a little thumbnail of it, that Donald Trump was the only one who saw an opportunity in defending the working people of the so-called flyover country when the coastal elites of both parties had come to ignore or actually scorn those people. Hillary, of course, referring to them as deplorables. And you point out that Donald Trump was the only one with the instincts and the energy to pursue this opening to victory. And nobody, I don't think anyone gave Donald Trump a chance in hell of winning the election, and he did precisely that.
And what was unusual is that he saw something there and he expressed a degree of authenticity in his empathy that 16 very qualified Republican primary candidates, much less the very well-funded, three times more money Hillary Clinton did
mm-hmm.
not see.
Right.
And that message was scientific. Boy, he understood that Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, if you flip those states, even by a few thousand votes, you win the election.
Yep.
And they thought that was just crazy. But I don't think it was just, as I said in the book, it was conniving, because he went to places like Youngstown, Ohio, or mm-hmm. Flint, Michigan, and started using this, our workers, our vets,
right.
our farmers. Or when he went to West Virginia, he said, it was just stunning. Hillary Clinton said, I want to put you out of business and you're all going to have to find new work.
Right.
And he came in and said, I love big, beautiful coal. And that was what people weren't prepared for, that a Manhattan real estate billionaire could be more empathetic to working people than the establishment, you know, Mitt Romney was, or John McCain was, or Hillary Clinton was. And he was authentic. He didn't change his accent with a southern drawl when he went to Alabama like Hillary.
He didn't
go to the inner city like Obama did and drop his G's. He didn't wear camouflage like John Kerry. He had that tie and that hair, whether it was at the Indiana State Fair or
right.
bowling.
He
people said, you know what? He's authentic.
Yeah. He didn't.
What he is.
He didn't feel in no ways tarred, did he, Professor?
He did not. He didn't. And I think people were just, I thought something was different. I mentioned that in the book, the first debate when Rand Paul of all people started in on him.
Right.
So you represent the nexus between money and politics, and I don't like it. And he said, well, you sure liked it when you came up to my office and asked me for $10,000. I gave you $10,000 and then you were quite helpful.
Right.
And you don't say those things.
Jeez.
That was what was just stunning.
We're talking with Professor Victor Davis Hanson. He's author of the new book, The Case for Trump. He's a senior fellow in military history at the Hoover Institution at Stanford. Professor, I, in my own estimation, looking at things today, I believe the socialist Marxist fail theories that are being promoted to the left could well create a 2020 presidential campaign that could see the Democrats, for lack of a better expression, going full George McGovern in November of 20. Am I kidding myself about that?
No. I mentioned that in the epilogue of the book. I think that they don't understand that Trump was running against a real person in 2016, and she was Hillary Clinton, who was a terrible candidate.
Mm-hmm.
They think that all of this invective and driving down his popularity is to 44 means that they're going to win. But you look at a variety of analytics, whether it's midterm House seats or Senate seats lost or gained compared to Obama and Clinton, that both were handily reelected, or his popularity at this point at the beginning of his third year compared to where Obama and Clinton were, was,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty good. And then he's going to be running not against Hillary Clinton, but I think a menu that has the potential to be for a lot of Americans very frightening. And boy, I don't think I've ever seen a Democratic candidate talk openly about endorsing reparations, approving infanticide as abortion, this new banning the internal combustion engine, abolishing the electoral college, abolishing ICE, a wealth tax, 70% or 90% income tax on the top rates. We haven't really seen that, canceling all student debt, free tuition, Medicare for all. If they get tagged with that menu, I don't know how they're going to, and they seem hell-bent on getting tagged with it. They're outdoing
each
other.
Absolutely.
And they even apologize for their past lives and their past views.
It's,
Biden, they just sort of grovel. They grovel to these young hipster progressives. I've never seen anything like it. And you just think at some point they're going to look at the 72 election or the 84 Mondale election. They're going to say, what? We're not going to do this.
Yeah.
But so far they haven't.
Yeah, they certainly haven't. It does appear that we're setting up for a pretty stark dichotomy of political philosophies opposing each other. So many things happening now, Professor, that are bent on destroying American culture. You know, I look at things today and I can't help but remembering the words, "What rough beast, its hour come round at last, slouches towards Bethlehem to be born."
Yes, I know it. It's a very difficult time to express oneself politically or to write on these issues, or you're a radio host, you know the passions are there. And I think part of it is there's a deep-seated recognition on the part of the left that their message does not appeal. It's against nature, that radical redistributionist message and radical quality of result rather than of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to find other means to implement, whether that's changing the demography by open borders or demonizing their opponents as racist and sexist and Nazis or whatever it is, or using Hollywood or professional sports or stand-up comedy. But for them, it's a 24/7, 360 degrees enterprise. It has to involve every aspect of our lives, where kind of the Republicans have been live and let live, go to work, do this, and then just promote traditional American freedom and liberty. And I'm afraid that sort of lackadaisical, laissez-faire attitude about politics is going to have to change, because the left is not just bent on, I think, defeating conservatives. They're hell-bent on destroying them. I really do believe that as a political ideology.
I agree. You know, there were great books back in the day, The Making of the President. This would be in that same category. The book is called The Case for Trump. It is by Professor Victor Davis Hanson. Professor Hanson, I've admired your work from afar for a long time, and it's a pleasure to have an opportunity to speak with you today, and I thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Great to have you here. Professor Victor Davis Hanson, the book is called The Case for Trump. It's available everywhere. It's on the bestseller list. He's a brilliant guy, as you no doubt were able to discern from our conversation, and the book is terrific as well. Be right back here on The Bobby Mack Show. Really a pleasure to have VDH on the show today. You may have seen Professor Hanson. He's been on Fox News and a bunch of other places promoting his book, which is the latest in a long line of brilliant books. To the phones we go. Matt is on the line and is in Greenville. Hi, Matt, and welcome to the program.
Hey, Bobby. Thanks for taking the call.
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to compliment you on your guest. Somebody recently asked me if I could have dinner with any living person. Who would it be? And I said Kemp.
Yep.
And
would have been a good pick.
He wrote a book called Carnage and Culture that I don't know if you've read, but it's basically 10 battles in history where Western armies won. And he lays out why Western armies are more dominant.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have anything to do with us being smarter or stronger or braver. It has to do basically with freedom, democracy, and free market capitalism.
Exactly.
And he kind of lays it out, and it's really interesting because he just keeps, you know, he's got a battle where he points out how banking won the day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just he points out a battle where just the Western troops stay put. You know, they're disciplined.
Right.
And it's because of the way they get treated. And, you know, it's, you know, people, they couldn't just be executed for no reason. And even when, with Vietnam, America lost the battle of, kind of lost the battle of Tet. But Western armies learn things because they don't shoot the general.
Yes.
They just retire them.
Right.
But, you don't get shot for losing. And you get fired for losing. But you can learn, you know, he was talking about how much you can learn from a battle that you lose.
Yeah, unless, of course, you're the Desert Fox, Erwin Rommel, and then you're forced to commit suicide, right?
Well, and he wrote another book where he talks about Patton and Sherman.
Yes.
And have you read that one?
Yes, brilliant.
That one's cool. About how, you know, you get some crazy guy in charge of a Democratic army and you better just get out of the way.
Yeah, and I don't know if I mentioned it in my introduction of Professor Hanson, but he is, of course, amongst other things, a military historian and also an agrarian intellectual as well, because, as I mentioned, he has a raisin farm, which he said they've now converted to almonds, and lives in California in a town of less than 25,000 people. So
he's an expert on Greek and Roman history.
Correct.
That's his thing.
Yes.
And he would write about the Greeks, and the reason they fought so well was because they didn't throw things at each other.
Right.
They tried to get in real close, and nobody fought that way.
Right.
And so he brags. He says farmers make the best soldiers.
There you go.
How to sleep outside and slaughter animals, and they're tough.
Yep.
He's an interesting guy. He is really an interesting guy.
He definitely is, and he's a brilliant guy. And to be able to succeed in that environment at Hoover Institution at Stanford tells you a great deal about his intellectual capacity.
Something really interesting about him is who is more conservative than a farmer and who is more liberal than a college professor.
There you go.
And he's both of them.
Yeah, right.
He's a neat guy.
It's a fascinating dichotomy for sure. Thank you, Matt. I appreciate the call. In on the text line, Bobby, I've discovered a more appropriate name for Beto or Rourke. Beta male, the dork. I think that he's referred to in some circles already as Beta O'Dork. Bobby, I hear a little Lindsay is coming to get your guns personally. Yeah, probably, but he's going to be very disappointed. Bobby, Professor Victor Davis Hanson is a great guest. It's good to see an intellectual on the same page with me. Philosophically, you mean, I'm sure, right? Bobby, did you see this crap in Colorado about their electoral votes going to the national popular vote winner? Really? You got to be kidding me. Bobby, please tell Professor Hanson I've read The Western Way of War 3 times. One of my favorite books, Justin Alexander. You read some of Professor Hanson's writings, and they will become there is some of your favorite books. Got to take a break for the news here at the top of the hour. Hour number 2 is right around the corner, though, here on the Bobby Mack Show for Monday.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.